Content.
Are we recording now?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Did we get the pistachio crunch recorded?
We didn't. I didn't get the pistachio.
Well, you didn't even record the pistachio crunches?
Well, no.
Why?
I was testing the effect. I didn't know he was going to run out of pistachios so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, do we need to go get another? No. We don't need to go get another bag.
You're following me to the play. Why am I at a playground? Yeah. What's going on here?
Why are you not at a playground? Is the question.
It's good. That's it sounds like a Henry question. Mm-hmm. He would ask that. Why are we not at a playground?
Why are we not at a playground?
Is there a playground nearby?
Which one's five?
Yeah. Show me the fifth swing. You guys missed the context on that.
He left
the number five.
Oh, okay.
Counting always terminates in. He just doesn't care about how to count or why we count.
Yeah, base five. He's base five because it's one hand.
No, it's not that. He just really loves five, not multiples of five. And so, like, if you give him, if you open up, like, any kid's counting book that's like, count the ladybugs, and I start counting them, he just, like, starts interrupting me. He's like, which one's five? I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, you know, it depends on which end you start from. It, you know, five is just how you count. He's like, which one of these is five? Hey,
stop holding out on me, Dad.
Yeah, and I'm like, all right, one, two, three, four, five. And he's like, five. I love five. That's just like,
Emberly will do something similar. No, she's not locked on to like any one number, but yeah, it'll be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 9, 10. 10. Like, you know, and so that's interesting. You were telling me about Henry like that, and they don't actually understand that we are tallying a quantity.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Totally
it's
lost.
It's just a thing.
Yeah.
He feels like one of these objects
is the fifth one, right. And I'm just holding out on him and making him go through it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm giving him an exercise in patience every time. He's like, can you just show me five? Yeah. Like, why do we have to go through the game?
Strange ritual to get to five. Just show me which one's labeled five.
And that means when he can count to 10, and I've heard him do it several times, but most of the time he just gets like so amped up and we'll count together. I was like, all right, let's count them. And they're like, 1, 2, and then he's just like, 5, 5, 5. It's like, no, there's only one five.
Yeah. It is interesting to have like mathematical concepts kind of unwound in front of you. I know as someone who's got school-age kids, with like the transitions in the way that people are doing math these days, like it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of like I tend to be like, no, that's not math. That's not how numbers work.
Yeah.
Because they teach things very differently. And
right.
So,
they do in the...
it's not... We don't
common
do
core math.
Our school doesn't do common core math.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Which makes most people who didn't do common core math like die on the inside.
Yeah.
But they do something... They do what is... It's not, I want to say Suzuki math, but it's something comparable to that. But it is definitely a different version of math. It's not Common Core, but it's not kind of how I grew up thinking. And so like having to remath my math, like just breaks my head.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not how you do that.
Right.
And they're just like, yeah, it is.
And truthfully,
like, no, it's not. I'm older than you, so I win because I'm old.
It's just, it's like different mnemonic devices that get you to arrive at the concept.
Like you said, the concepts are the same. Math is, you know, a universal kind of language. I know, looking at core, whatever you call it.
Common Core.
It did kind of make sense when I was looking at it that because like just... Learning to add and subtract on like a line
on a scale on
gets
you thinking in vectors,
basically introducing algebra before the variables and all the confusing stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I was kind of like that kind of maybe I would have been better at math.
Did you guys? I'm not 100% on this, but I want to say someone told me that Common Core did away with FOIL for factoring polynomials. first outer, inner, last.
Yeah,
that mnemonic. Like, you guys know the foil. I don't. It arrives at the same conclusion, obviously, but it's just a different.
Is
mnemonic
that the same and, as? Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally.
PEMDAS that's would be PEMDAS. The. That's your order of operations.
Gotcha.
Foil is how you take.
Like you got parentheses and then this equation in parentheses maybe right.
And when you want to factor if you've got like multiple x variables in an equation so you've got like 2x squared plus x plus 7 FOIL lets you factor that out into the common components of x so that you can solve for x so that you don't have two x's in the equation
you
arrive at x equals some derivative formula
and so everything is on the one. Other side of x right.
And so, yeah, first outer, inner, last was just another mnemonic that's like you take the first polynomial, and I don't even remember how you actually do it. The outer ones.
I can't remember. That's a specific kind of algebra, too. I can't remember what it's called, like the whole solving for x like that. Like you have everything but x.
Yeah.
Like 4x equals 2, and then you got to solve for x, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then, algebra's fun. And I never had the privilege of taking linear algebra. I dropped out of my comp sci program before I got into, that. And I'm sure that I do linear algebra in my day-to-day. Yeah. I don't actually know the differentiating line. Some of you guys have done linear algebra.
Nope.
Yeah. We are real web developers here. Yeah, guys. Yeah. Not one of these motherfuckers knows what linear algebra is.
I mean, I don't know it conceptually, but I
can fucking do a regression. Is that linear algebra?
Well, and that's what's funny is like as we continue.
Look it up.
Someone's listening and going like,
Jesus, you guys.
That's the funny thing is as we continue to work deeply in like the data science realm and dealing with folks who are doing all kind of it got quiet. That's
whatever
terrifying.
That buzz was went away.
It did.
That's the channel 2 buzz that
it's
I couldn't identify.
Very clear now.
I like it.
Yeah, it feels so empty in here. Mm-hmm. The more the buzz there it is.
Your
there
buzz
is.
Wore off, yeah.
Yeah.
It's back. It's like a warm blanket that went away.
That's comforting.
Yeah.
There it is. We're okay now.
Our studio is not in total isolation, folks. There's a hardware startup in the basement that sends reverberations throughout the steel frame of this building constantly.
Some stranger than others at times.
They're testing piezo sensors down there, and so you get to hear it.
Well, what I was going to say was that
linear algebra.
Linear algebra, but that I find that I continue to understand complex mathematical. Problems and like how to solve for them through experience in a way that I wouldn't get through like just learning it.
Mm.
But then all of a sudden we'll talk about a concept in stuff like in regards to clustering or things like that. All of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, of course that completely makes sense. And that's when I start to go like, oh wow, I'm learning data science through like practical means and that's a very strange way like I don't know it conceptually I know it through just like sheer brute force of like learning concepts through doing them.
So Tara, we were on that call today
and
we were talking about clustering algorithms and we were talking about vector links in between clusters
right
and that's through that project and through one of our other ones that works in a lot of multivariable spaces. I've come to understand exactly how that works. If you conceptualize a many different variables in a plane, like many dimensions, right? So you can visualize three dimensions because we live in that world and see it, but if you think about 20 dimensions, 20 different variables, you can sort of imagine that as additional planes in the space between those others.
This
is a graphic on my screen right here that you guys can see that kind of demonstrates it. You can simulate it by just drawing a lot of different planes. And when you plot variables on those different planes, you can actually measure the linear distance between those two planes.
Yeah, Euclidean distance there.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what a clustering algorithm is doing.
Right.
It's plotting variables on all these different dimensions, and you're actually measuring the distance between points across those dimensions, just like you can measure the distance between a point on the x-axis and the y-axis, and that's your line, right?
Yeah, and here's where I will literally make someone die. Mm. I can't remember, is it... geometric algebra or algebraic geometry.
It's algebraic geometry.
Yeah, algebraic geometry. Like that's like that concept where they've married the two, and it's just like, hey, we think in space, that's mm-hmm. geometry, mm-hmm. but math also operates in that, so mm-hmm. we can take the two and marry them.
And the math that operates in that space is linear algebra.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. that's what we're, I'm looking at it here now. I'm Googling, what is linear algebra? And it is a thing that we were talking about an hour ago.
And so we don't have the words to like articulate it. That's what I've found oftentimes.
Yeah, that's,
I understand the concepts, but I don't have the words to articulate it
right.
until I finally understand. Like, you've said that word a million times, and now I finally know what you mean. I've understood that
the whole time. I've had this equation.
Like,
I've had this concept, but now I can label it. And
Exactly. There's quite a few things that, like, as I continue to progress into like kind of deeper levels, I often find like, oh, I know that. I just didn't know the word for
that. Didn't know
that.
What it was called.
Yeah, and it's just about vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. So the speaking vocabulary, the actual definition of linear algebra is the branch of mathematics concerning linear equations, such as linear functions, and their representations in vector spaces and through matrices. And so it's matrix math and also applying algebraic concepts to vectors, right? Mm-hmm. Continuous variables rather than discrete ones. So, yes, we do end up doing that all the time. Mm. Blake, you're quiet over there.
Yeah, no, just think. I'm thinking, a lot less of that for me as far as the that type of math. Actually, when I was at Nielsen, the thing that I think I gained an appreciation of more than any other type of math was calculus.
For sure.
Because we used it all the time.
Yeah.
Mm. And so, you know, when I was going to school, math was definitely not my favorite subject.
Yep. Agreed.
I went to school as an English major, so
journalism.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
English was the only subject that I was good at.
We were all liberal arts people.
No one taught us how the math in a way that made sense.
It was never practical.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And everyone just goes like, "Well, math sucks, but you got to learn it. So here, learn it."
Mm-hmm. I also think part of my problem was I didn't. Because it wasn't applicable in my mind, it did seem so
abstract.
That I had a hard time understanding why it was important and sort of placing the emphasis on it. Because actually, what I ended up doing after Nielsen is I went back and like took some calculus courses because I was just interested.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just like interested in exploring the subject, it's totally different than when you're in high school and care more about other things.
I think you get different motivations in the real world.
Yeah.
Whereas like in your high school or junior high math class, and you're like, yeah, okay.
I'm here because I have to be here.
And a train left that city and a train left that city and there's a fucking function that will let me tell you when they're going to intersect.
And I'm going like, if we're talking about these abstract concepts, like I would rather be talking D&D and figuring out like the stats for this orc and how it can, you know, and like, let's do math like that.
Like, I don't care when these trains intersect, but then you get in the real world and you have a job working for the railroad company, and they're like, if those two fucking trains hit each other, you're fired. It's like, I understand now the practicality of this math.
Right, but the percentage of people who go to that job is very minuscule.
That's true. Yeah. But we should be using different word problems in math that aren't two trains leaving different cities.
Exactly. Yeah. But the problem that I think people face is you can't do that because I did well in math, I just didn't enjoy it. Mm. And so when I got to stop doing math, I was just like, yeah, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Put it at the high school level. So then when I went to university, they looked at my SAT scores and said, oh, great. You don't have to do any remedial math. Mm. Oh, and at the time I was looking at doing a potentially a business minor, which I gave up long ago. And they were just like, oh, well, if you're looking at a business minor, you should do math for business. Mm. I was like, okay, sure, makes sense. Turns out the guy who was my temporary advisor at the time was the chair of the math department. Mm. Don't ever take that guy's advice if you don't love math.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So he put me in a math for business majors or something of that nature class, and everything was word problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all around stuff that wasn't relevant to me. Like we're gonna make up really complicated business problems in word problems, and you have to know all the math behind those things conceptually and solve it. And it's just like, none of this is relevant to me, and you're making me remember math I barely remember. Mm. This class is terrible. And everyone thought that. Like, it was really apparent in that class. Like, everyone in that class was experiencing the same thing I was. And the lecturer or the professor would start lecturing and just, like, scrawl stuff.
Yeah.
Do all these things. And we'd all get lost. And thankfully, there was one dude. And I'll remember this guy for the rest of my life. He looked like Bill Pullman.
Okay.
And he wore a Jägermeister hat every day.
Okay. Paint a picture.
Yeah. It's this guy. I'll say 19-year-old, but it's... We'll say 21-year-old Bill Pullman with a Jägermeister hat on.
Sure.
And he was the only one brave enough to ever go, I don't know anything you just wrote on that board. Can you explain that again? And the whole class would just go, thank you. Thank God.
Yeah.
And they would explain it again. And when they did that, they would break it down into discrete enough pieces that we could kind of take it and put it into a context we could understand and then solve problems around that. But to your point, like we want to use math to solve problems that we have, but we don't all have a shared set of problems. Mm-hmm. And so until you can teach math, you have to either teach math in a context that applies directly to the person, mm-hmm. or you have to teach it in an abstract enough way that everyone can apply it.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge of
mathematics. The latter is what we've tried to do.
Right, yes, right. So we kind of end up doing both, but we don't do either very well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem of everybody learning math. Because once you like learn math and use math, you're just like, yeah, of course I use math. Math is awesome to have.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. yeah, until then, it's just like, hey.
I kind of feel like learning math should be more exploratory in that you kind of almost like choose your own adventure type of thing. Like there's a goal, but you have to like uncover the parts of mathematics that get you to that goal on your own.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't think sort of just pushing things like, you could teach principles, but I don't think just like pushing problems on people or just rote memorization does anything in the long term for like building the foundations of mathematics.
The understanding.
Yeah, maybe problem-solving skills in general.
Yeah.
I'll say when I have in the past mentored people in software development, same thing.
Right? Definitely correlation there.
Yeah, I've had way more success like not trying to brute force be like, okay, this is how you write a for loop. I mean, yeah, you just, loops are a thing. You got to know how to do them. Do the loop. Understand the loop. No, that's not how you loop.
Yeah.
That's an infinite loop.
Yeah.
But when you can take that to, I mentored a kid a few years back at the Arkansas Code Festival, and he was super interested in blockchain,
mm-hmm.
but was not a developer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, you got to like get into that. And I didn't know it either. I didn't know much about blockchain then or even now because it's bullshit. But anyway, that was the bullshit he was into. Yeah, people forgot about it. Oops.
Yeah, what
happened to blockchain? Bubble burst. Yeah, man, damn. Too bad they put it on the sides of buildings at the local university, the Blockchain Center of Excellence.
Mm.
No.
You've not heard of the Blockchain Center of Excellence? You're a mile away from the Blockchain Center of Excellence.
You're right kidding me.
They're going to take blockchain and they're just going to pull those routed letters off the wall and be like, Center of Excellence.
That's what we meant. It literally has blockchain on the side of a building?
I don't know if it's on the building. They do have a department that is the Blockchain Center of Excellence. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Because the Blockchain Center of Mediocrity was taken.
You heard my soul leave my body at that point. Yeah.
So in this kid's defense, he was 16, okay? And so he thought blockchain was cool. And he was like, he was into this concept of people were running these like under the radar blockchain gambling websites.
Mm.
And he was like, just out of curiosity, he asked me, he was not into the rest of the curriculum of this thing. So he was just like sitting away from everyone else, just like, I'm not into this programming stuff.
Mm.
Too cool to do it. And he was like, man, I wonder how much of blockchain transactions, like cryptocurrency transactions, are actually just gambling sites at the time.
Mm.
And I was like, that's a cool question. You think we can find a list of wallet IDs for blockchain gambling sites? He's like, oh yeah, there's like a whole public directory of it. And I was like, sweet. And then we sat down and we wrote Python code to go pull the blockchain history and all these transactions and map them back to wallet IDs and, you know, go back 24 hours and see what percentage of them came from this set of IDs. And he was totally into it. We sat there and wrote code for like 4 hours against this problem space. Yeah. And it was because he was interested in answering that one question. Exactly, as soon as he had the question, it was like, I will now show you how to write code and solve that question. And through the process, we had to write case statements, or we had to use dictionaries and Python. You don't have those. Yeah.
Were you writing JavaScript?
We had to do comparators. I had to teach him a little bit about HTTP. We had to pull the stuff over an API. We had to do for loops. And so like we had to do some memoization. Like it's going to be really inefficient if we just look this up every time. So let's store that in memory. And so ton of concepts, but it was all because he had this particular problem space he was interested in.
Yeah.
And that's hard to teach.
Yep.
And not every kid's going to walk into a classroom with a problem space in mind. But as soon as they have one, it's a really good mechanism. That dude walked out of there knowing how to write some basic Python 4 hours later. And like 30 minutes before that conversation started, he could not have been less interested in even attempting to learn to write code.
Yep.
And it was super cool.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. That's kind of, I remember, having one of those moments. I won't go into the details, but of like the first time I solved a real world problem by writing code that actually saved me time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when the lightning bolt went off. That I always thought it was neat and played with it. And that's kind of how I feel about computer science in general. Like a lot of times it's fascinating. I don't need to know all of it, but that first time that I solved an actual problem.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. I dig this. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I think for me it was, which is probably the case for a lot of people, was how do I make this so that I don't have to do it anymore and make my life easier at my job?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Automation, actually.
That was the first step for me.
Laziness breeds some serious innovation.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn the topic slightly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk a little Scrum.
I want to talk a little Scrum. I want to talk a little estimation. So, all right. Blake.
Okay. All right. I'm into this.
Do you run an agile process at the...
Sort of.
Mm, you're air quotes agile, which is what most companies are.
Well,
we were air quotes agile for a long time.
We're like lean manufacturing Kanban.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. Kanban is agile.
I know some of those words. Yeah. I don't know that when you combine them all, I get it though.
So we treat...
Lean came from Toyota.
I think the manufacturing
We treat different things that you do during the process of development as different manufacturing work centers, like in a factory floor.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you work on something, you can watch basically the flow of work from one work center to another.
Mm-hmm.
Example being, we have the stuff that's ready to be worked on, so like the supply. Mm-hmm. Then we have the stuff that's currently being worked on. Then we have the stuff that needs to be peer reviewed. Mm. And we have the stuff that needs to be QA'd. Then we have the stuff that needs to be deployed.
It sounds very familiar.
Yeah. I mean, that is...
Because we do use a Kanban board.
We use a Kanban board. We represent... So we run Scrum here.
Yeah. Yep.
And so in Scrum, you do have different states of doneness, right?
For sure. We did Scrum at RevUnit.
So one of the main differences between Kanban and Scrum is that Scrum says you go into an iteration with an entire body of work that is your goal for a sprint.
For a sprint,
right?
Yep.
And so you build that sprint, and the size of that body of work is informed by an estimation process of how big is it, and then you go look at your prior velocity and say, okay, we estimate the complexity of this sprint, then we go look at the last sprint and see how many points of complexity or whatever scale you use we did, and that informs what we feel like is reasonable for this sprint, but then you turn it loose, right? You say, okay, sprint started, here we go, and stuff flows across the board in whatever order and time scale you want. The goal is to have it all done by the end of the sprint.
Yep.
And Kanban, and maybe you guys do it this way, the way I've heard it, is that in your different work centers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, right, everything can be sitting in the in-progress column. Right. In Kanban, a lot of times you limit how much stuff can be at each work center.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Only so many things can be in progress.
Right.
Yep. You're not allowed to move another thing in progress. You need to go finish something that's currently in progress.
Yeah, right?
To pull something new
in. Or like help, you need to help something else get through the process.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to move something else forward because it's a factory.
Yep.
This machine can't accept new work if it's backed up with a backlog.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so do you do estimation as part of that?
Not really.
Because one of the key differences in Kanban is that it doesn't there is no start and end of an iteration. It's a constant, always moving flow.
So right. What we do, we measure cycle time of a task.
Okay.
And we take average cycle time from the time it gets pulled out of ready to be worked on to the time it gets into production, which is deployed. And so we measure that, and that's how we provide estimations, is we look at like a feature, if that's broken up into 10 stories, then, and we get X number of stories done, and a story takes, I don't know, like 2 days or something, then we can give a pretty good estimation of how long it's going to take. I think we do like 85%. So there's a buffer there, right? Just in case.
Contingency.
Yeah.
15% contingency.
Yeah, exactly. And so when I started, I'm glad we're talking about this today. It's actually been really interesting. Mm-hmm. So when I started, we were doing Scrum, but it just wasn't working for us. And so then we decided to try this Kanban thing, and the amount of improvement that we've seen and since we started has been pretty insane, to be honest. So we, when we started doing it, it would take a task, pulling it into the in progress column to being done, about 9 days to go all the way through.
Right.
And we, in 6 weeks, we got that down to 5 days. And it just it's like a rock. It just keeps dropping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of that is because things just flow through more quickly. Mm-hmm. And part of it's because we are getting better and better at writing stories that are, the batch size of the story is very small.
Yeah.
Which also helps it go through the process more quickly.
More granular. And then you also have the thing where it doesn't enable you to get in a position where you have 100 things that are 90% done. Which means nothing is done.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can have 100 things that are 90% done.
Yep.
But nothing is done from a feature perspective. Yep. Right. So I can see that.
And here's kind of the interesting thing that I think caught us off guard. And when I talk to people about this, which it's come up a lot recently for some reason, that catches them off guard. The limit for the number of things that can be in progress is half the size of our team.
Okay. Hmm.
So we have 9 developers. We can only ever have 4 things in progress at once.
Do you pair program?
Sometimes.
What do you explain? Exactly. I need you to explain that better. Exactly. Yeah, because I don't get it.
Yeah. So if you don't have something in progress,
you've got to be QAing.
You got to be reviewing PRs, mm-hmm. QAing, deploying got things,
yeah.
grooming stories.
Supporting the... Right.
Yeah.
So you don't have dedicated QA people because half the team has to be doing something QA. Other than development right now.
Right. So... and pairing is like almost the last thing on the list. Like if there's nothing else to do, but that happens so rarely, it actually ends up, there's a shit ton of stuff to do that you can be doing to support everyone else's work to get it done more quickly.
Yep.
And it also just allows people to take a step back and think and be a little bit more strategic about the things that we need to do. So, part of this Kanban process and the way that we're following it is this theory of constraints. You guys know about this?
Yes. I do, because I spend way too much time reading about Agile, but yes.
Okay. I don't, but also listeners might not.
Sure.
Okay. So the theory of constraints is basically, if you think of a pipe with water flowing through it,
mm-hmm.
if there is a kink in the middle of the pipe that doesn't completely constrict the flow, but it slows it down. Mm. If you make an improvement at the beginning of the pipe,
does you no good,
or the end of the pipe, it makes no difference to the flow.
Mm. Right.
If you widen that kink, every amount of effort you put into widening that kink improves the amount of things that flow through.
Sure.
And that's basically the theory of constraints, that nothing is as beneficial as removing constraints to the things flowing through the process.
Always attack bottlenecks.
Exactly. If something is hard, man, deployments are always really hard, or man, we deploy shit and it breaks a bunch of things, so we don't have any integration tests, or man, guy always does XYZ. Like, these are the things that, as you take a step back, you start to see these things, you can focus on addressing them. Now, the thing that gets kind of difficult and confusing and takes a lot of discipline is that even if you see something, you still can't work on it. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is you can create a task that goes in the list that then can be pulled into ready to work at some point. But what you have to be diligent about doing is those types of tasks have to be prioritized above even feature work.
Absolutely. Got to unkink the hose.
You're putting stuff in Scrum, you're putting stuff in a product backlog.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. To get it there for, because it's kind of the same thing when we run Scrum. What happens is someone notices an inefficiency or Austin proposed two refactors today different things. And it was like, in order for you to work on that, in order for you to create a pull request for it, in order for it to go through QA, we need to create a ticket for it.
Yeah.
The size of the sprint is fixed with the complexity that we had. So we put a ticket in the backlog and we prioritize it high for the next sprint,
right,
which isn't too much different what you're talking about. In our model, the main difference is if it's day one of the sprint, it will definitely be 2 weeks before anyone looks at that.
Yeah.
On your model, it could be tomorrow.
It absolutely could be tomorrow. Right. Yeah, could be. Yeah. It could be today. If it goes in and you identify it as a bottleneck or a constraint, typically someone will, as soon as something gets finished, pull that in and jump on it. I think the other thing that we tend to do in Kanban is to totally lose your train of thought because Tyrell got out of his chair. Tyrell got out of
OP. Yeah.
And I was extending the sentence, trying to get it to come back.
Give you a minute to find it, but I do. I have a different question.
Okay.
And I think you have good perspective on this, right? Because I'm thinking about that model, and like naturally, I start thinking about how would we apply that here?
Yeah, that's what I was
differently
thinking.
From Scrum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the key differences in that model versus Scrum is that you're measuring cycle time and it averages everything out.
Mm-hmm.
In aggregate, everything's going to go faster and you're going to get your maximum velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are, for the most part, if I understand your business well enough, the company may be a services company, but your team is probably functioning more like a product team. You have core service, maybe you have client work in there?
It's very rare. It's okay. Actually... sort of in a transitional phase right now where there is some service related work, but migrating more toward a product strategy.
Got it.
And so most of the development work is going into supporting that.
So I asked that question because I look at that at face value and I go, I see Kanban being very valuable in a product organization.
Right.
I see it being very difficult in the service organization, which we're purely services.
Yeah.
And one of the main differences is you can improve your flow, your cycle times, you're measuring averages, and some things will meet the average and some things will not.
Mm-hmm.
And with us in client services, especially on the model where time is money, right? Taking more time is going to cost client more money, which means that estimating how long is it going to take to get this feature done is really, really important to our business model.
Yeah.
Not just how we develop and like accurately measuring for us as developers, but at the end of the day, it's like the client, there's deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
When is it going to get done? And also if the answer to when it's going to get done is like, it'll take us 4 weeks, that translates into real hard dollars of what they're spending on our services if it's that big of a task. And we have to be able to communicate budgets to them. And so for that reason, while we could employ a lot of that, we still do a complexity estimation so that we can say, how long is it actually going to take to get this particular task done?
Yeah.
And openly acknowledging that this task might be three times as long as the other one.
Yeah.
The average of those two tasks is not relevant to the customer. They don't care, right?
No.
They care on some metrics, but when it comes down to dollars and cents of like, should we have you work on that? Is it worth the money we're going to spend?
Mm-hmm.
We can't say, well, on average, any one feature will take this much time. We have to really be able to look at something and say, we think that will take twice as long as this.
Well, I think that's even a component in what we do.
It is?
Yeah, I think it's got to be when you're estimating work like that ahead of time. So just as an example, if you know that you, for a product, you have to, you want an estimate of how long is this feature going to take. Before you've written anything down, I still think there's the conversation of like, you know, having like how complicated is it? And
right,
because you don't ever know for sure until someone sits down and works through all the details.
You know, right. You know how long it's going to take when you finish.
Yeah, so,
always. That's yeah. That is when you most accurately know how long it's
absolutely
take. Every
yeah.
moment before you're done is you're chipping yes. away at it's uncertainty, guess, yeah. but you have uncertainty yeah. until you're done.
So yeah. On that note, I'd like to make a potentially private conversation public. Earlier today, we Casey, you and I were on a call.
Do you see how nervous I look?
Yeah.
You and I were on a call.
Oh, yeah.
And
this is good. I know where this is going.
Yeah. I gave a very rough ballpark estimate with every hedge I could.
You hedged it hard.
I tried to hedge as hard as I could.
I was happy.
Okay, that's good. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to hear. Yeah. Because I was just like, okay. Because stakeholders want, like, gross understandings of how complex a request is. Mm-hmm. And so we, like with a client that we're currently working with, we had to pitch a refactor. Like, hey, right now
we're
front
going
end
to
expects
spend time
this
and
concept.
Money and you're not going to get any new features.
Exactly.
Right?
I said, hey, we built the front end with this understanding. Now that you have finally given us more information about this thing that we've asked you about a bunch, we have to refactor what we've built for you thus far.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take some time. And they're just like, okay, well, but I mean, how much? And on the call, I had to go, okay, hedge. This maybe. And I wanted to get your read on that because like I had to like live give them an estimation of like, this will take potentially.
Yeah. I don't think like, that ever
my estimate
away.
Is potentially for one developer to take this long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring that up and say, Casey, in that, like, reflecting on that moment, do you feel like that was accurately handled? Do you feel like that was a good, do we never want to do that?
Here's what I'll say. The question wasn't accurately handled. I don't think any of us know, right? And that's the reality when you have to give an estimate that quickly, and is it accurate? Who knows? And that's the tricky thing about client services, because we can preach up and down all day of like, but that's not how the philosophy of Agile works, Mr. Client.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And we can't
accurately
be accurate.
Versus well would probably be a better distinction to make.
But I wanted to point that out. That didn't mean to belabor the word, but essentially like it's worth noting.
That's a good distinction to make.
And so in the best case scenario, which we don't have control over, the client never forces you to give an estimate at gunpoint like that. Right. But when they do, you have to give an answer. You have to. Right. And then the best thing that you can do is hedge. So to give you some context, as I was thinking about the problem they were talking about, and I was watching you do mental math as you were talking through
in the room,
in the best case scenario, the way I'm thinking, I was like, oh, he's adding right now. And I saw the adding machine cha-ching. And he said, I think with a single developer dedicated to it, it would take, I was like, please God, don't say half a day, say a whole day.
I said less than a week.
And he said, within a week. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. That's plenty of contingency.
That's many days.
I was excited. So you handled that extremely well.
Thank you.
I think if that question had been aimed at me, I would have said a day.
Oh,
and you'd have been mad
at me. I honestly would have.
Yeah.
I'd have cooked.
Yeah, that's going to take longer than a day.
This is a learning experience because next time that happens, if it does levy at me, I'm like, well, you'll have to ask our director of engineering about that. I'm just a lowly CEO.
And that's why
I'm here for color.
Yeah. And that's why I said, let's make a. That's the fun of this podcast. That's why I said, let's make a private conversation. Mm-hmm. One we normally probably would have had on Monday because we have our meetings on Monday.
And I've been
like, man, in that meeting, how did that get handled? Because I always want to reflect upon conversations that take place in front of a client with you in private afterwards to make sure we're always on the same page.
We're in sync.
That's important.
But to have that conversation here so that we can kind of like explore those things is a lot of fun, but also very informative.
Peek in the window.
Hopefully our listenership.
So that went extremely well.
Yeah.
That's where that ended up, right?
Because honestly, I probably would have said I feel solid about 3 days.
3 days, yeah.
I feel solid about 3 days, so I said less than a week. A day, a day is humming along. A day is quick. I would have died inside had you told him a day.
I mean, hell of a
three
day.
Three days is like... We can comfortably do it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I was just like, we could comfortably do it in 3 days.
Yep.
But our comfort is based upon what we know of things.
The happy
and
case.
Oftentimes, yeah. What we know of things is not accurate. So I was just like, less than a week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I think that leaves you a lot of wiggle room, which I think should always be the case. And I know that that makes conversations with customers very difficult a lot of the times. But I find that saying a day and asking for forgiveness later when you can't.
Bad mojo.
You can't meet that is much harder than just being very conservative up front and over delivering. Yeah, coming in early is like, oh, you didn't have to spend as much money as we thought you were going to.
Even if they mentally start crunching shorter because you've over delivered so much,
right?
Yeah, like if they're just like, well, they're going to tell me a week, but it's really only going to take 3 days. Guess what? If it takes a week when we told them a week.
Yeah,
they're not going to be mad. They're going to be like, "Oh, I guess it actually did take a week."
Yeah,
rather than if we consistently deliver on target,
yeah,
and start under delivering, that's a big hit.
You got to Scotty it a little bit, anytime Captain Kirk asks Scotty, like, "How long is that going to take?" You'd be like, "Oh, I don't know, 4 days probably."
Yeah,
it's like I need it in two. All right, well, I'll see what I can do.
And you make it happen in 2 days, and you're the hero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's where we were.
Yeah. I will say though that to go back to Scrum a little bit, I really enjoy Scrum, but I think
we've been loving it.
Yeah, I really like it. It's different for different teams, and I actually think they promote different things within a team. And what I mean by that is, I think Scrum takes a more cohesive team.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I think Kanban takes a more collaborative team.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is Scrum is more about the team functioning as one, and Kanban is more individuals helping each other to get something done, and I think those things are different.
It feels to me like Kanban kind of lends itself to people having functional roles, right?
Ooh.
That like you could be in a place where, because on a Scrum team,
over people almost,
on a Scrum team, say you've got a Scrum team of four people, and that's what we're doing.
Oriented programming.
So you've got a Scrum team of four people. Well, guess what? On that team of four people, you are not going to have a front-end engineer dedicated, a back-end engineer dedicated, a DevOps engineer dedicated,
right.
QA a business engineer. Analyst, a QA engineer, and a data scientist, right? You can't do that, so people have to be more generalist.
Mm.
But if in the model that you guys run, if one person is responsible for their swim lane in their manufacturing center,
yeah,
they can continually move things along.
I definitely,
although the way you've described it, it still sounds like you benefit tremendously from generalists jumping from one center to the other.
We're definitely, so that is definitely one way, and I think that's probably an even more traditional way to think about it is, if you had large teams, I think you would totally split it up. So if you had a dedicated like back-end team,
right,
and you had a dedicated front-end team, you would totally treat those as completely different like boards, work centers, but the work would flow from one to the other.
And you really couldn't do that with Scrum, I don't think.
I don't think so.
I'm just saying, like, there's a back-end engineer, and that back-end engineer does back-ends for all of the client projects.
Yeah.
No, they need their project context, right?
So we did a little bit of that at Revuna because designers also had their work in the thing, and we were dependent on the designer. It was kind of similar-ish.
As we think about bringing design in over here, I've thought about them being more of a functional unit and not a fixed component within every team.
Yeah,
I can see that with a designer like that. Having been in manufacturing, I totally get the Kanban process. Like, I've been in a department where raw product comes in and you spit it out, and you don't need to know. Like, I was building trim for houses, and I don't need to know what house they're putting it in. Like, I just know
or the dimensions that it will eventually be cut to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, I like both of them. At RevUnit, I really enjoyed Scrum, and they did it very well, in my opinion. But I have really been liking the Kanban thing too. I think it's I think it's been a really, honestly, a really successful experiment. And for the team that I'm on now, it works really well.
That's awesome.
Yep. And I do think that's important. Like, it can't be a one size fits all, and the ability to find what works best. And I think that's, I actually think that's why you end up seeing so many different versions of Agile out there.
Yeah.
Because people tailor it to what works best within their organization.
That is in the Agile manifesto, people over process, right? It should be about what works for the people more than dogmatic adherence to a process, which is the why process I joke about
work it for us.
That's why I joke about air quotes agile, because if you're not air quotes agile, you're probably process over people. So just directly, like, do you think you could, having been at both, this is a very esoteric question, but the process you're running at Rich Context, do you think that it would apply and work well at your last job at RevUnit? You think you could take that exactly to a product team over there and it would work?
I 100% think I could.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's cool to know.
Yeah. It's been, man, I like can't overstate how life-changing is a strong, but it like literally changed the way, literally changed the way that I thought about work.
Wow. That is pretty life-altering.
Yeah. And I will say that, so part of it, there's a book that sort of teaches this in
I believe Young Master Austin is reading this.
Yes, book. It teaches it in terms of,
is this a narrative format?
Yes.
Oh my God. No. I'm sorry. I heard the synopsis of this book.
Oh, I know this book.
And
now.
I was like, no, that can't be.
Dude,
that okay. has to be,
they
so
they were
painful.
Talking about it at Fayette Pie, so and listen, then Austin was like, oh, yeah,
give us the pitch. Give us the pitch. Yeah.
So, okay. So,
sell me on this book.
No. Right.
Yeah.
We're done.
No. Let me. Okay.
Tell the audience what the book is.
The name of the book is The Phoenix Project.
That is the one.
And it is one of the authors of the book, is literally the guy who coined the term DevOps. And it's mostly from that
That's
perspective.
That's some serious fucking street cred right there.
Yeah, and it is from that perspective of like IT within an organization that is not doing well. And I struggled with the book at first because, similar to Casey and Tyrell's reaction, it was a little cringy. However,
is it fictional narrative?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fictional narrative based on some real, it's like a lot of the characters are based on real people, and they kind of talk about that at the end of the book.
So summarize the book. You've still not done that.
Yeah.
As best you can.
Yeah, without spoilers.
Right. Like the premise of the book. Summarize the premise of the book.
So the premise of the book is a automotive parts manufacturing company that has an IT component, and they have this new IT project that they have called the Phoenix Project. That's its code name internally, that they think is going to solve all their problems.
Bum, bum, bum,
but
bum.
Typical corporate company, giant corporate company, which, so many of the things reminded me of Neil. So many things reminded me of Neil, the way Nielsen did shit while I was reading this. it's dysfunctional. Like, that's the best word for it. And so it's the story of this guy who ends up being put in a position where he has enough power to make some changes, discovering some of these principles, how some of these principles of manufacturing apply to knowledge work. That's what it's about. Like, I had a hard time relating to the main character, the protagonist, and that was my struggle with it. And the guy that reads the audiobook, because I listened to it, it was hard in the beginning.
That's next level.
Yeah.
Listening to the audiobook of that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's next level.
But
my main roadblock on it is only my imagination of what it is.
I'm just imagining
chapter 7, the day I force pushed over the development branch and then rebased and had a shitload of conflicts.
I was proud of my comment when Austin brought it up.
It's not even from that perspective. It's not from a development perspective.
Okay.
It is from an IT perspective, and he fucking hates developers.
Okay.
There's a literal quote is like,
"You're not selling
show
me on this book."
No. Listen, I'm not trying to.
As you talk about how great his cargo pants are.
No, but a literal. literal quote is like, show me a developer who doesn't break, push breaking changes to staging, and I'll show you like something. Like
I'll show you cargo pants that yeah. have a perfect slot for a yeah. tone generator.
He totally like shits on developers. but that does change over the course of the book. So
okay,
to be clear, I love sysadmin. You're good people.
You guys are doing the Lord's work.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
I'm so but, glad we don't need one here.
Yeah.
By the end of the book, I was there.
You're with it.
I was with it.
Hmm.
And
it's got great review. I'm looking at the Amazon page.
I've seen that cover before. I have read a little bit of the Yellow DevOps book down there that he probably wrote too.
DevOps same author, same group of authors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is co-authored by three luminaries of DevOps, according to the editors. The cover.
One of them did like through. One of them coined the term, and then a couple of them have just been involved since like early days, before organizations really thought that it was important, bringing those two things together. And man, yeah, I just can't, like, jokes aside, like, I just can't believe like how like much it really did change my perspective, because I went into it totally skeptical.
Okay.
I was like, oh my god, and even probably for
that's
like,
a good testimonial, because that's where I'm at. I'm in the skeptical phase.
Probably, to me it sounds like something that a fictional character from D&D would read.
We literally laughed at Austin when he was just like, hey, I'm reading this book, and we're just like, oh come on man.
Yeah probably took like 3 hours into it before I started to come around, and then I still wasn't even convinced. So my boss at work had mentioned the book, and I literally put in Slack, like, I don't know if I can finish this book.
Sure.
And I was like, I'm struggling. And so a couple other people at work had finished it and were like,
encourage you to stay the course.
Yeah, hang in there. And it did. It improved. But man, it was tough in the beginning. So
well, I'm 3/4 of the way through Cryptonomicon. So
to me, that's and that's a hard pivot, I definitely applaud that, because I've only gotten one chapter into Cryptonomicon on my second read of it. So yeah, maybe I could get through this one faster.
So this year I'm trying to read more, because I mean, you guys, English majors, I used to read all the time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I read so many books. So many really good books. Yeah.
I wish I had that time again.
I know exactly where you're going with that.
I totally. Paige complains.
Well, she doesn't complain. She tries to motivate me. That's awesome, by the way. That's awesome. She'll say, like, you should read more. And I'm like, you don't understand. I read all fucking day.
It's true.
That's true.
And the last thing that I want to do when I get home is stare at words on a screen.
Well,
or paper. Even. I'm just over it. I just want something to project on my eye holes.
And I try. YouTube, you know, like I try. I get a page and a half, maybe 2 pages in. If I'm reading at night, I'm just like, this is the perfect time. I'm done with my day. I'm going to sit and read.
You fall asleep, don't you?
A page and a half in, the book hit me in the face.
Yeah. I can't do it at night. Can't do it at night.
I did last year start an Audible subscription. And I haven't done, because I don't know, man. Like, the narrative book is one thing, right? But like, that is not, Audible is not the format for like a math book.
No, like a programming book, right?
There's code samples in the book. I assume they don't even try to make audiobook versions.
I would hope not.
That'd be terrible.
Sake, but I did, as far as like personal development, career stuff, started doing, consuming, business books via Audible. And that's been good. I still haven't, I can't even think of the last time that I've gone through a fiction book either as an audiobook or paper.
I probably,
The Dark Tower. I need to
read that one. I'm actually kind of a voracious reader.
Yeah.
I've finished 2 books probably this year. Dan Brown's new one, Origins.
Nice. And,
as in, like, this year being less than a month.
Oh, no. Sorry, last year, because I'm old. And
over
now,
the last,
I'm,
right. I lose over track the last of the contiguous years. 12 months.
Okay. Yes, right. yes, exactly.
You meant five in 2020.
I've done five since the beginning of January.
I am.
Well, that's impressed. The audible.
Wait, I'm sorry.
No.
Did you say you've
read them with your eye holes?
Yeah, I do both.
You've read five.
He listens to one while he reads the other with his eyes.
No. When I'm exercising or commuting, I listen to an audiobook.
Okay.
All the other ones I read.
I got a weird thing with like fiction books to where, you know, if I start it in pulp and I can smell it, I got to finish it that way.
Yeah, no.
And so I feel like I'm cheating when I'm listening to it.
Oh, it's different books. I don't cross-pollinate.
Oh, okay. I get that. Okay.
So I always have a physical one that I'm reading.
Yeah.
And then a completely different one that I'm listening to.
But you don't, yeah,
I don't cross-pollinate.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
And so I've read, and most, I like nonfiction, but sometimes I mix in some fiction. Mm. Like I read the first Witcher book.
Yeah.
And then
I haven't finished it. No spoilers.
Oh yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's good. Mm. And then I read, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Wow. That's thick.
Content wise. Yeah. Oh, well,
that is not an insubstantial book, I should say.
No, the next one is even more so, Man's Search for Meaning. It's about a psychologist, a Jewish psychologist who ended up in Auschwitz and survived. And it's that harrowing tale.
Yeah. From the perspective of a psychologist, no less.
The Phoenix Project I read, and then, I'm almost done with the Yvon Chouinard's, Let My People Go Surfing, to the founder of Patagonia.
Wow, sweet.
It's actually not that great.
Oh, I had higher hopes.
It's pretty dry.
I have a very small but growing Patagucci collection at home.
Oh, so I love Patagucci, dude. Man, it's pretty much my favorite.
It's good stuff. Oh man, the other day I had a sales meeting and I don't know why he picked an outdoor venue. It's fucking 36 degrees. I was getting dressed in the morning and I was like, it's gonna be cold. I'm not wearing like a fucking sport coat.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to wear my Patagonia jacket. Is that too informal? Because I was wearing slacks and dress shoes and stuff like that. I was like, fuck it. I don't care. I was talking to Paige about this. I'm like, I don't know. We'll just see when he shows up. And then he rolled in for this meeting with outdoor seating, 36 degrees in the morning. I still don't know why he picked the menu, wearing his Patagonia jacket. I was like, bro, you got to buy something from us.
Yeah.
Now that we're Patagucci. We're Patagucci brothers.
And Patagucci. I didn't know what that, it took me 4 minutes to figure out.
There
what
you
that
go.
Meant.
Now you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It lasts so long.
They fucking lifetime warranty. I got a hole in mine. Just they fucking repair it. It's so great. Good. It's awesome.
I'm going to be a running nerd now and go like, oh, that's exciting news because I've got a hole, in a pair of my shorts.
Mm. Are they Patagonia shorts?
They'll take care of that, dude.
I'm gonna do it. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Good. Because otherwise, I was gonna try and like learn to stitch it up.
It's
like,
hard to patch. I actually put a hole in one of my Patagonia jackets and tried to patch it myself, and I fucked it up.
It doesn't matter.
They don't care.
Doesn't matter. Like, if you go,
you put a hole in it.
If you go to like, I don't know where the closest one here is, but if you actually can,
you take a $90 flight to on Frontier to Denver. Oh, is that the easiest way to do it?
I didn't know if there was one in like KC.
It probably is.
No, it'd be like $50 for one person.
$50 for one person.
So the point, like, you can just send it in. But the point is, a lot of the retail locations, if you go in and take it, like, they have the shit there to repair it.
They'll repair it right there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Their shit is just,
some exploration,
it's just too nice. They can't let you walk around in a fucking ratty-ass Patagonia jacket. It's bad for the brand.
That's good.
It's pretty awesome.
So, to return to insubstantial versions of complicated things, have we reviewed what we were originally coming into when we talked about
Scrum? We haven't. And let's, I love it. Let's, I love it because
us, yes.
So
estimations.
I just love that, like, serendipitously, this turned into a conversation that made it seem like we were fucking professionals that walked with this topic planned of Scrum v Kanban and all this great content. The real topic we were trying to get to was a novelty blog post.
Yes.
Had found, which was I was going to ask you about estimation scales, and then we went where we went.
Yeah.
So you don't do estimation.
No, like not
point
really.
Based. So we're no. we're doing story pointing.
So okay. So let me clarify. We have like small, medium, large
t-shirt sizes.
Okay, so you do. Yeah, you do.
But it's really like pretty inconsequential in the grand scheme of things. And almost everything
is a medium.
Is a medium or a one?
Right.
Like a medium or small. Like
us. Wait. Your mediums are ones.
Yeah, well, because we just don't have the label, so we just use 1, 2, 3,
all right, fair
small,
enough.
Medium.
Yeah.
So we use Fibonacci. So yep. Like
that's what we use the Revunet.
A lot of our stuff ends up as 3 or 5s.
Yep. Most everything's a 3 or 5. And when we go out and estimate stuff, like when we're like early in a project and we just have things scoped out,
yep.
Rather than having the developers come in, it's just like, all right, we got 150 stories, average amount to 3.5 points.
Yeah.
Actually, we average them to 4.
Yeah.
They're going to be either a 3 or 5. Roll that into an average velocity for the team. We think this is a 20-week project.
Yeah.
Right? That's how we do that. But so we use Fibonacci numbers, but Tyrell, I guess, you had found this, right?
It's true. And I've tweeted it from the Lofty. No. From the Friday Twitter account.
So you saw this a week ago if you're on Twitter.
A week ago.
And so this is a Scrum estimation scale, an alternative to Fibonacci numbers.
Fruit salad.
Okay. Fruit salad, it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is by Francis Bierman. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
You're welcome.
Yeah, okay.
All right, you ready? I'm just going to read it. I'm just going to dictate this blog post.
We'll comment accordingly.
I will pause here just briefly before we really go into it.
Yep.
Okay. I'm excited about the potential, and hopefully we can kind of establish a pattern.
I like it.
That's the pattern.
It's been a while since we've had that crisp IPA right on the mic.
Where we can... We can tweet out what we're going to.
Sorry,
it's turning into like a Bud Light commercial. Where we tweet out before we can, like about a week in advance, what we're going to talk about, so that people can go read it and have thoughts about it.
Uh huh.
Yeah. And then listen to us talk about it and hear our
bullshit.
And then like yell in their car, like, no, but this.
I didn't get that memo.
So. Argue with us about it. No, you didn't because you're here live.
We didn't telegraph that memo.
No, that just happened. Yeah.
Hopefully we can make a pattern of some sort with this. We will try to. So yeah, for those of you who are listening right now, hopefully you followed us on Twitter. This is not a promotion to follow us on Twitter. But also it is.
At Friday. What the fuck's our Twitter handle? Friday Deploy? Friday Afternoon Deploy?
This is where we fail.
If you like the show, you'll find it.
Yeah, you know us on Twitter. Yeah. But you read this a week ago, and you're just like, oh yeah, I remember that, and I read that, and that was kind of a cool thing. Here's my opinion on it, and you're going to listen to us talk about our opinion on it, and you're going to agree or disagree, and you can join the conversation in that way.
I love it. Yep. It's good stuff.
Excellent.
Now that you know, you've missed one, but you're caught
up.
Too
late. You failed, but hopefully you'll be better next week.
We can screenshot and put it on our Instagram, too.
That's perfect. Oh. Yeah, because you can't use... That's how you pros on Instagram. Yep. Screenshot of the Notes app on your iPhone.
I'm
going to
type the link out on the Notes app on my phone, and then I'm going to screenshot the link on the Notes app on my phone, and I'm going to post it on Instagram.
There you go.
But videos get way more engagement, so you got to make it a video with some music and a little bit of movement.
What if it's just a live
before
picture.
We get started?
Sorry,
we're a live picture.
We ran out of time.
We have derailed this.
Before we do this, I want to just say that the worst thing in the world is when someone sends you a screenshot of code.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Terrible. Chaps my ass.
Web dev and Django subreddits. I'm looking at all you motherfuckers. You do that. I've seen phone picture of monitor. So you get frame rate sync problems. Yeah. I can't even read it.
It's all blurry.
You posted a photo of your monitor. I think you... Honestly, you're not going to be able to solve this programming problem because you just lack computer skills.
What got me, the one I saw was on a Mac, so I was like, you even have QuickTime.
You can make a screen recording.
What are you doing?
Make a video, make a screen.
I immediately disregard any of your advice now.
Do better, folks. Always post your source code as either ASCII or UTF-8. Okay.
Here we go.
Fruit salad, a Scrum estimation scale. So Francis came up with a scale that he thought captured complexity better and is also can be translated to emoji. So you can dump that sweet UTF-8 right into Jira, assuming you can put that right there. Everything.
Okay.
All right. So a one. So this is Fibonacci numbers, right?
Yeah.
So a one. That's a grape. A grape. Easy it's trivial.
Easy to eat.
There's okay. only one way Everybody to eat it.
Okay. All right.
Like I hand you a grape. I hand you a grape, Blake, and I say, Blake, how long is it going to take you to eat this grape? You have a pretty fucking solid handle on that.
Yeah.
I have to put it in my mouth and chew it.
Yeah. No brainer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
We're done.
Two. Right. That's 1 point. Yeah.
A two pointer. That's an apple. A green apple, only for distinction from some of the other emoji. So Francis says most people know how to cut up or bite into an apple and eat it. Generally know what needs to happen for a task. Might take a little bit of time. That's an apple.
Okay.
There's a core in there, though. That's that core.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to work around. You got something to work around.
Can't just eat the whole thing. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Three, Francis says, is a cherry. Pretty easy to eat. Sometimes it's got a pit. Not always. Depends on the cherry. You're either going to need to split the cherry or extract the pit in some way. You want to be careful not to swallow the pit. You know most of what needs to happen. It's pretty straightforward, but it's a little bit unknown. There's a couple unknowns in there.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to reserve my thoughts.
No, I have comments on this, too.
We have already tweaked the scale. We're just covering it right now.
Okay. We probably share a similar kind of thought there. Yeah.
Okay.
Five. What do you think it is? Fruit salad.
Pick a fruit.
An orange.
No.
No, but that's good.
I think an orange needs to be in here. Pineapple. Five's a pineapple.
Oh, shit, dude. That's...
Does anybody really know how to cut up a pineapple, Francis asks?
No, I hate pineapple.
It's not something...
I do. I actually do.
Okay, yeah. But you had to invest some time
in it. But I don't know how to cut one up well.
Are you confident that you know how to do it the right way, though?
100%.
Okay.
Wow.
A lot of people aren't. I'm not, right?
Yeah.
Do I do it right? Not sure where I'll start. Some's gonna work out. No major unknowns. It's just a lot of meaty work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eight. Eight-pointer, mm-hmm. which is where we end our Fibonacci scale, and I think Francis does as well. Anything bigger than that, you got to break it down into grapes. Watermelon. Mm. That's a watermelon.
I knew watermelon was going to be at the
That's
end.
That's a wild card, he says.
Yeah.
Do you have to have a machete to cut it?
Right.
Yeah. You know what?
Is it seedless? Seedful?
Pro tip, watermelon, bread knife. Bread knife just fucking gets right through. It's long enough to get all the way through it. The serration helps. Bread knife.
That's good. I've got a super sharp butcher knife that will take off a finger.
Well, you can just swing that with a little gusto behind it.
Yep.
Okay.
Do you need a machete?
What about the seeds?
Do you leave the seeds in? Might get messy. Some unknowns.
Yeah.
All right. Two other things on the scale. A tomato. That's a question mark. It's apparently a fruit.
Oh my God, it's a fruit, but it doesn't belong in the fruit salad.
Shouldn't be here.
But it's here.
You would declare tomato when you have no idea about the task. It needs more info. This is like needs requirements. It's the classic question mark in planning poker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then finally, you have an avocado, which is also a fruit. It goes bad really quickly. It's not really scopable. It's just a chore. That's a task. It takes a fixed amount of time. Mm-hmm. No point in estimating.
Okay.
That is the fruit salad scrum estimation scale.
Okay.
All right. Give me your feedback because we had thoughts too.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, we thought it was fun. And we said, okay, we have to adapt this. The minute Tyrell posted this in Slack, it was like, okay, there is one known outcome from this is that we're no longer using a numeric scale for estimation at Lofty. Unless we translate it to the clients.
Yes.
Then they need numbers.
They need numbers.
Yeah. Okay. Else they think we lost our minds.
Yeah. My first thought was that I think the cherry and apple should be reversed. My second piece was it doesn't sound practical because I have like translating in my head, like even as you're saying it,
right,
is like I'm already like doing mental gymnastics to figure out.
You're like, I know pineapples really well. That must be a one. Because apparently you're a fucking pro pineapple chef.
But even if you love pineapples, that can't be a one. A one is something you just put in your mouth. You don't put a pineapple in your mouth.
Yeah, right. No.
You gotta process that pineapple.
Sorry to just like destroy that.
I was pretty okay with most of the things except for the tomato and the avocado. What?
Did you ever, when you played Panning Poker, did you have question marks and tasks?
No.
So those are unscopable things.
That's why?
He's put those in to account for
We always did those as 13s, which was like the unknown. 13, no. It's going to take, well, because it gets pulled in and it's like, this is going to be a shit ton of effort because there is so much unknown. That's the way we accounted for that. But it's something we can do, but it's probably going to have to
take. Did you point bugs?
No.
Most people don't. Yeah, and I think in his scale, that's what he's saying in Avocado is. It's just a task. It's a chore. By the time we figure out how long it'll take, we'll be done with it. So there's no point in estimating it's going to fucking rot before we make a decision.
Yeah,
that's where the avocado comes from. It's
such a quick shelf life.
I hate the way avocado's brown.
Man, that's
so quick. Too quick. So cool. I disappoint myself so much. So many end up in the trash.
I think it's fun. I definitely think it's fun.
Do you like the novelty?
Eat brown avocado?
But I think it is a novelty.
These two are having it as well.
Totally separate conversation about avocado.
brown bananas are the best, though.
Oh, you're like Sloan was like that. I walked in one day and I was like, "Hey guys, there's a bunch of fucking rotten bananas in here."
I was throwing them away. Right?
Yeah. And then Sloan was like, "They just got good." That's what we do. We freeze them.
That's banana bread.
Freeze them, turn them into banana bread, or you freeze them and turn them into banana ice cream.
They don't have brown spots on them. I don't want them.
Really?
Get them out of here.
This is great.
Make them right.
I can now establish a robust
glucose in my. In my bananas,
if I'm to a point,
a little bit.
If I don't want to make banana bread, I now have a supply chain outlet for my brown bananas. I'll bring them to you.
Now, here's what drives Alyssa crazy. I love a good banana. I hate banana bread.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
Is it a nut?
This is what she lives with.
Monster.
You are a monster.
This is what she lives with. She can make no sense of me.
If I remember,
God bless her.
If I remember some of your quirks correctly,
you probably know a few by now.
You fucking hate pineapple.
Yes.
And that makes a 5 really challenging for you.
I hate it. I already hate it. Yeah.
So here was my.
Oh, you hate pineapple? It's delicious.
I don't know. So
that's delicious.
It's I
love it.
I think it's a childhood memory, and it has to do with. And here's an interesting side tangent. Alyssa's dad hates pineapple because he was in the Navy, and apparently somebody had ordered too many pineapples on the boat. They had to eat pineapple every day.
That's like my dream.
Every day. Yes.
I would eat it every day. Yes. I would never get you tired guys, of it.
I
kindergarten, they had pineapple juice at this
drink
event.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I drank it. I hated it. And we watched Fantasia. And I hate Fantasia. It reminds me of pineapple
juice. It's all by association. Something else happened while you were drinking pineapple juice and watching Fantasia.
You know
that is an associated memory.
And I'm 100% on board. It's something associative. It's not rational.
I want you guys to know. I just
don't hate pineapple. You hate your childhood.
Not all of it. Transformers were good.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Alan, they transcend hatred.
They do. Until the movie, and they killed off Optimus Prime like right away, and then I learned about life.
Oh man! You know, I just booked this trip, this beach trip. I am going to drink pina coladas until I am absolutely fucking sick.
Yeah,
and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. We're
going
to make sure you hate pina coladas.
Fucking pumped.
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
We're going to Destin.
Ah, sweet.
Oh, Destin's we rented
fun. Gold Coast is fun.
We rented a big house with a couple other families with kids, and so it's like this just big crazy
just
house,
a fucking house party.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Sweet.
That's sweet. Yeah.
All right, so my update to this scale, this was the thing that Alan and I talked about. We can close it out there because we're going on for too long anyway. Yep. But I didn't like the cherries.
Yeah, the cherries seem like
people
a weird...
People don't have a lot of context to the cherries.
Yeah. I don't know about y'all, but real talk, I will eat a cherry with a pit. Fuck it.
You'll just swallow it.
I don't care. It's not big.
I love cherries,
dude. It's not like a peach pit.
Yeah.
It's not a
fucking plum.
I'm careful. I'm careful while I chew in there because you bite on it.
Yeah,
that's unpleasant.
Tooth
So you got to kind of mull it up a little bit.
So my thought was, I was on board with grape. It's pretty straightforward.
Grape is straightforward. straightforward. Yeah.
Apple is Apple. I feel like is very. Everyone knows how to eat an apple, but you do have to make some choices. Am I gonna slice this fucker? Am I just gonna bite into it? I have different approaches.
To me, that feels more like a three, though.
I feel like the 3-pointer is an orange.
Yes.
Yes.
An orange. Perfect. I have to peel it.
I think that's fine.
I have to peel the orange.
Yeah.
And that's going to take some
work. Once I get it peeled, I understand that. It's pretty easy
work. It's pretty straightforward, but
I'm
going
to have to peel it.
I'm going to have to peel it. And the thing about peeling an orange is I don't know how that's going to go.
It's never the same.
Dude, is this going to be a fucking bastard orange that leaves half of the peel behind? It has two peels underneath it.
I've been so spoiled by clementines.
That's why I hate citrus.
Dude,
all citrus.
Yeah.
It's just more work than it's worth.
And
a grapefruit is
worth it.
Clementine breaks the
my
paradigm.
Orange is my favorite
fruit. You'll never convince me that citrus is not worth it. I'm fucking I'm 9 months into this lemon tree in my office.
Lemon tree.
There is one lemon on there, and I'm going to eat the shit out of it.
A grapefruit is not worth it.
Fucking a year of investment of fertilizer and time and tending. It's going to be awesome.
I'm good with the lemons. But a grapefruit is never worth it.
Fuck you, man.
Grapefruit.
I don't like grapefruit.
I don't like grapefruit either.
You have to peel it twice.
No, wait, what?
Peel it. No, you just cut it. You leave it peeled. You cut it and you use a grapefruit spoon.
And you just spoon, get the stuff.
That's a grapefruit spoon is like overcompensating for the fact that you have to peel it twice.
What I'm learning right now is that in the fruit salad estimation scale, some things are 8 points. If you don't have the right fucking tool,
that's a grapefruit. That's a grapefruit.
But if you have the right tool, that's a fucking 2-pointer. It's like, no, man, no, we're not going to spend 2 weeks building a dashboard.
That's kind of insightful.
We have a Tableau license. Just fucking plug that shit in the Tableau. It's a 1-pointer. Eat a donut, build a client for 8 hours.
That's what I think about the orange, man. We got one of those pampered chef.
Oh, those are the best.
That's yes.
Peel it right there.
You just unzip your orange.
Unzip it.
Unzip it.
That is the word.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
Pampered Chef is the best.
Yeah.
They make the coolest shit.
And they should sponsor our show.
They should. I will
Highly relevant. Highly relevant. With a very targeted audience. They all use the fruit salad
estimation scale. We do talk about food quite a bit on
here. That's true. It's true. That was my main change. I think pull the cherry out, put an orange there. Orange is harder than an apple. I think we can all agree with that. Yep. There's more unknowns in an orange.
100%.
You never know when you're going to get an orange with seeds.
Yeah.
You're just like, there are seeds in here.
Wait, well, this is an orange. Apple, this is a fucking clementine.
Yeah. In an apple, right? I can just bite into it. Yep. Maybe I could slice it up, but I can bite into it.
You could take, there is a brute force approach to it that will short circuit
that will work.
Tight crunch for time.
Yeah.
Now, the watermelon, I'll leave the pineapple at 5 because I don't feel confident that I know how to cut a pineapple.
It's really not that hard.
I feel confident that I will succeed 100%.
Yeah.
And I'll end up with a good amount of pineapple. I'm not going to waste it. I'm not going to I'm not going to be like an idiot in an infomercial that has fucking pineapple in my hair. And she's like, do you struggle to cut a pineapple? Because you're a fucking moron. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
But I leave it at 5.
I almost think 5 is almost like if you're going to dice any of the fruit. Like I'm even thinking a tomato.
You're going
to
mince it.
To dice that.
I think a kiwi would be good in this scale somewhere.
I have no idea how to eat a kiwi.
No one does.
Skin on. Cranberry.
Skin on, in my opinion.
Cranberry?
And some people
pomegranate?
Think
doesn't cranberry only come in juice?
Pomegranate's a tough one.
Yeah.
Or dragon fruit.
Yeah, because nobody knows. They're like, what the fuck
do I eat the seeds?
Do I eat the seeds? Am I a cretin for eating the seeds?
Takes a long time. Spit some of them out.
I didn't know until a few years ago, probably like 5 years ago, that pomegranates, or maybe it's passion fruit, grows around here.
Oh.
On little vines, wildlife.
Well, interesting.
Yeah. And so you can eat it. And but same thing. You get a cluster of, it's so sweet, but then you have these seeds that kind of hurt to chew and you don't know what to do. Should I swallow them? God, I hope that works out later.
Man, I just want a grapefruit now. Fucking love grapefruit. And
I'll eat a grapefruit. I find it to be a breakfast food.
Yeah.
Dude, I was going to say that. I love putting it in cereal.
It's definitely breakfast.
Cool. Yeah. All right, and watermelon, I don't know, man. I mean, it is big, and there are some unknowns, but there's not that many unknowns. I feel like who hasn't fucking ripped into a watermelon and ate it over the sink with the shit going everywhere?
Sure, but
you can just go right through a watermelon.
I think here's the trouble with the watermelon, though, is and maybe it's that I've matured a little bit. Like, you get a big
You don't eat yours over the sink with the shit
I do while I'm processing it, but I can't eat the whole watermelon that way. So
you do have to process it. You got to get fucking bags out.
yes.
And Tupperware.
And then there's juice. And, yeah. You know, and it's a messy, like, thing you got to unpack. Process.
What, right? Do I do? Exactly. What do I do with the rind? Am I throwing this out and getting ants? Am I going to compost it? Am I going to sit here for a fucking hour and a half with the garbage disposal running? Just
I feed it watermelon to the chickens. Rinds. Chickens love it. Yeah.
There's another team involved. Is what they're saying. Yeah.
I pass off part of it to the other team.
You throw that over the wall to the DevOps team. Yeah. And they start pecking at it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they start writing dev scripts for it. Yeah.
So I had some tweaks to it, but this is what we came from. It is like I love an alternative novelty scale to pointing. It's fun. I found this fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because we had this debate for, like, you know, instead of shipping a 3-point card today, we spent 2.5 hours talking about our tweaks to the emoji scale. But it was fun. And so that was the actual only topic for this episode.
Okay.
And we had so much more serious content by
that
accident.
Worked out.
And that's why we asked Blake on the show.
Yeah. Hey. He brings serious
talk.
I wonder if we could come up with, like, a Star Wars pointing system.
Oh my god, that's a whole other episode. Yeah,
that's a challenge.
We're not gonna start
accepted.
That now.
No, but I bet we can.
So,
I bet we
can too.
Yeah,
if you like the show, go to iTunes and leave us your Star Wars. Leave a 5-star review, but as the content for the review, leave us your Fibonacci sequence Star Wars based pointing scale.
Yep, that'd be great.
I love it. All right.
I guess we didn't get enough 5-star reviews because I don't have my leggings yet.
No, that was a different thing. That was Patreon.
Somebody needed to contribute $20.
So I'll say we do have some new patrons. I'm not sure if we've announced them yet or not, but we fell short of our goal to get you leggings.
Fuck.
We'll get you some leggings anyway. Just the patrons won't get to see it.
Oh, we got.
Then what's committed. The fun in that? No, really,
I'll have a blast.
That's all for your lady.
So
we got.
I'm throwing a quick shout out to Tony Lamont and Terry Connolly, two new patrons.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for your support.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys.
I appreciate it.
We got hoodies now. I think
we have hoodies on the store.
If we don't have them, we're on our way to having them.
For sure.
Oh man,
I saw.
That's
like,
right up my alley.
Yeah,
I mean, hoodies, literally wearing one right now.
Chest pocket logo. It's good stuff.
Very cool.
All right. It's been a good week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Check us out on Patreon. Also, our Teespring store, friday.higherlofty.com, if you want to check out some swag. So, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys in a week.
Yep.
Adios.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow @FridayDeploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.higherlofty.com. That's friday.higherlofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@higherlofty.com.